Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Recently, Pete Wheaton House has been going to other places and interviewing, and it's been so many episodes that I wanted to highlight some of my most important ones that I felt that were really needed to be examined and explored in different capacities. And this is one that will be instrumental in educating from all types of housing and houseless people. And it definitely breaks the mold from neoliberal or liberal ideas about unhoused people. All they have to do is mean test and work and those kind of harmful policies or understandings. And it also pushes against the conservative idea that has infiltrated our community as well.
If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. If you're going to San Francisco, you're gonna meet some gentle.
This is Theo Henderson from Wheaton and Howes, and we are here in San Francisco to one of the earlier creators and one of the founders who have had lived experience of being unhoused.
And we have a few people here that we're getting their insight and perspectives with. I'm going to let the person, because my name is Theo, I didn't introduce myself, so what's your name and tell us a little bit.
Janice,
tell us a little bit about your story.
I am a recovering addict. I've been through a lot. I'm 38, and I've definitely seen a lot of different things that's happening, you know, through addiction, without being an addiction, that I could say I've seen more progress in the past with the environment versus now with the COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it comes with the mayor, comes with the officers around here, things of that nature. I've seen anthrax, I've seen towers come down, I've seen a lot of different experiences, but this is probably the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Our city is not as effective as I would like it to be. I've been clean from crack cocaine for 6 years. And what I see now is that the poverty is terrible. I have my different opinions about London Breed, which is I've seen it get more worser now that she's in the office than before. This is my opinion, so. Mm-hmm. Don't judge it. But, it's too lenient. The officers here with the things going on, all the shooting, mm-hmm. all the, drug infestation, there's not enough being done. I'm on Citizens app and somebody got maced over here right across the street from the police station. That's how bad it is to where, The job's not getting done,
Let me ask you a question, because I'm hearing, are you talking about you're looking for them to crack down on poor
everything.
People?
Everything from us wearing our masks, the city won't get better until they actually do their part, as a job.
Okay, so.
We got all these people getting jobs here from the second chance jobs, the porta potties. A lot of people with green suits on to make sure that the streets are nice and clear, and keep the sidewalks clean from even walking down the street and seeing all the poverty.
Okay, so I'm just clear, because
I'm coming in, so I'm not sure if I'm talking about the right topic.
Right, because we're kind of let's back up a little bit, because what Weedy and Howells do and what we stand for is, we're trying to be able to create a new situation than relying on police, because they bring violence. And for example, there has been some of my guests here that have issues with substances and mental health issues. Yeah. And some of them have met a violent end for just existing. So we don't stand for them coming in and cleaning up. We believe, as if we are community members, we believe in our creating new solutions. For example, it shouldn't take, the mother who had her son was beaten because he had a psychotic episode, killed, to be when she's calling him to get him some help. Yeah. That's not the solution.
Right.
So what we're trying to do, and what this podcast does, is what can we creatively do, like trauma-informed care? What can we do to create situations and solutions to make sure that it's not a crime to have a mental health issue? It's not a crime to be addicted to substances, because most people have trauma and they utilize the best things that they can to cope with that trauma. So that's where I'm coming from.
Well, being a recovering addict and coming from Walden Houses and, Leave with Worth Centers and all this, now it's gender response, trauma informed with Health Rock 360, things of that nature. I really feel like, it starts within the organizations, not to make it, because, I do have a heart for people that does have mental, emotional, physical issues, to where they can't, they can't constantly, they can't pick themselves back up on their own, but some of these programs and stuff, and now these days are too lenient to the people, because I have, for example, I know someone that's staying at 214.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there 2 years now.
Okay.
You can use in the house now, you can do all these things, but it's harm reduction.
But I was going to say, because people don't, and one of the disinformation that's out here is that people think that people can magically come off of it. This is a health issue. And what we need is harm reduction sites, because it takes time. Because if you do, for some people that have been using it to medication, and from a psychological or medical standpoint, that body has replenished and utilized that drug as the coping mechanism. And so, if you tell them to just drop off and take, do it cold turkey, they will die. Literally.
Some people's bodies are used to
the drug,
the damage control that has been done, and I understand that, I started using crack cocaine when I was 17.
What made you start to use it at 17?
I had PTSD. My mom, I've seen a lot of abuse in my life. I think for me, because I went to Catholic school for 14 years, and my family tried so hard to get me not to see, all the trauma in the world, things of that nature, it kind of detoured me, like my backpack, like Dora the Explorer. I want to see what's going on out here, because I've been so in the shell for so long. All my friends probably got pregnant already with smoking weed and all this stuff, and I never really had that experience. So I was like, I was trying to see what the world had, what it was about, and I kind of went far from one step to the next step, and finally, but for me, I understand, as far as, giving people the chance to find themselves, to get the help that they need. For me, it took me a lot of different situations, the programs, to say, hey, you know what, it's not really up to these people that's constantly beating me up with this information. I found my way within the choices, and we all have choices too in life, some of the trauma that has been done to certain people, though, they can't even find that choice, like I say, I kind of understand where you guys are going, you know, with it. And I thank God for the where he has brought me to understand, because a lot of people can't understand. The trauma has been done from years and years in the past, you know, from growing up, that they probably will never find it, you know?
Well, and one of the things, and the reason that this is so fresh in my mind is, like, you and Carlos and I was in Oakland, and there was an elderly woman. She had to be in her mid-70s. She was brutally beaten and raped a few weeks ago, and she, to cope with that, she's using, and so it's like, it's very difficult for, you know, someone that's outside not understanding. We don't know everyone's story. We don't know on the trauma that they're going through. And if we utilize the same destructive, abusive practices that we've had in so long, we've ingested, like police or criminalization, we're never going to get, you're not going to jail a person to sobriety. Right. You're not going to jail someone to mental sanity.
Well, you know, yeah. I'm going to be honest about what I'm going through right now. That's still, I don't use crack cocaine anymore, but I'm a DV survivor. Mm-hmm. I almost died from my ex-boyfriend 2 years ago. In my bathtub from, you know, getting choked out, you know what I'm saying? And so, although I don't use crack anymore, my alcoholism, you know what I'm saying? So I understand trying to cope and deal with certain issues without, you know what I'm saying, with getting the help or finding yourself getting the help that you need. People's stories, like, you know, Cooper's, you know what I'm saying, you know, my insight to try to, you know, just pull all these stories, all these, you know, things in, so I can know, hey, I'm just like everybody else, you know. I fought for a different life, but it's one drug for the other, you know, at the end of the day. So I try to make sure that, you know, I'm no better than anybody else. Keep the understanding of what, you know, poverty is and what it could do, you know, the pain,
yes,
the suffering.
Yes. And trauma, because like I said, you know, it's very, very traumatic to be out here. And particularly, and what Cooper, you pointed out, it's very, and I'm interviewing him, and I know it's very traumatic for women and men too, but mostly women, because they're very vulnerable. Here's a late 70-year-old woman who has gotten brutally, you know, so she had to be moved into another community where it's safe. Right. But what, imagine you being displaced and no one's really there for you, and the only solution that they have is to find you, to put you in jail or to criminalize you. It's just not, you know, you're going to find some way to cope with that kind of darkness. So.
Yeah, so, and I'm definitely trying to see the light within, you know, just saying, hey, Janice, you can get up out of this. I'm not in a relationship, so I'm scared of dealing with, you know, the male factor, you know, it's definitely, so I understand poverty can go in different ways, emotional stress, you know, and how we cope. I thank God that I've chosen to do it a different way, because I don't know what it would take me to if I was to go what I'm used to, what I'm comfortable with, you know. I definitely just feel like the environment, county, the police, if they'd be more in, you know, vulnerable to people like me from my past to now, Cooper's situation, I think, you know, we wouldn't have all these killings and all these, you know, misunderstandings of someone, you know, that got a cart and, you know what I'm saying, and he's just trying to survive versus, you know what I'm saying, versus judging that person. So there's a lot of judgment within, you know, here. That's one thing that I'm definitely sensitive to. I've learned how to share my story a little bit more day by day, you know, so I can get, you know, not to be judged, not to be criminalized, not to be put in the institution because I said one thing that triggered somebody, you know what I'm saying? Just understand it and listen to what I have to say.
Right.
And then you might get an understanding of what, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It's the bigger picture, you know, not in the moment, you know what I'm saying? The inside of that struggle, personal struggle.
You know, when I became in the house, I come from a different background myself. I come from a very well-educated, and I was a teacher, a school teacher.
Yes.
And I got ill. And so I fell into the idea of deserving and undeserving house.
Right.
And of course, then that easily disabused when you got there. They don't care if you got a bachelor's, a master's degree. They don't really, really care.
Right.
You know, they're going to come to arrest you, or they're going to come tell you to move. You're going to move.
Right.
So That opened my eyes a lot about unhoused. But I also think, too, doing this podcast, going different areas and listening to other people's stories, people that have substance use challenges, people that have mental health challenges that are functioning, and understanding that there is no such thing as a deserving or undeserving unhoused person. Yes. We all need the humanity. We all need care, and we all need kindness. My mother used to say this all the time. It used to drive me crazy, but it don't cost you nothing to be kind. Right. And that is what I want to pass on, because we don't know everybody's story. And sometimes they're dealing with so many insurmountable challenges that's just by the outside we can make a snap judgment. But we really don't know what they're battling from day to day. So I want to ask this lady, hello. How are you? I would like to introduce myself. My name is Theo. I have a podcast called Weedy Unhoused. What's your name, ma'am?
Hi, Theo. I'm Roadkill.
Roadkill. These cool, roadkill. These unique names.
Yeah, a lot of people feel uncomfortable with saying roadkill, so you can call me RK.
RK, I'll be better, because I don't want to be disrespectful.
No, that's why. This is roadkill. More of a formality for anybody.
Okay,
being roadkill.
Okay. So, tell us a little bit about your story.
That is a huge, I mean, it's like one of those things where do I start? I mean, okay, so I guess to start, I mean, first off, I mean, do you want to paraphrase anything that you...
Well, let me make it easier for you. So you're here in the Coalition for the Homeless. How long have you been here?
So I have been with the Coalition since 2018, and beforehand I used to visit the Coalition and the Mission when my mother used to receive street sheets.
Oh, cool. So you got interested that way. What can you tell us about what's the first impressions that you had when you heard about street sheets?
So I grew up a lot around my mom's community, which were the homeless population. So, I mean,
so your mother was a homeless worker?
My mom was a homeless sex worker, and she's been like that since I was since she was nine.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, I find that having the street sheet is like amazing, and you know, we were one of the first, you know, cities in America to actually do it. Mm-hmm. And I just wish that people would take this program and make a pilot program for themselves, because I find that like this supplemental income is like really rewarding. And it just provides dignity to the people that we serve. So,
if you made me stepping back a bit, your mother was a sex worker, but were you raised in the streets, or was you your mother protected? Most parents try to do the best they can. So
just to give you a little background story, because I don't want to take too much of.
We have plenty of time.
Okay. Well, it is also some of it's my mom's story, so I don't want to say too much of hers, but I was born in a hotel in the Mission.
Okay.
It says that on my birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't get any more San Francisco than that. you know, so just being in the streets was kind of like embedded into my blood even before I was born.
Okay.
So, you know, my mom, kind of going back a little bit with like what you were talking about, you know, I do completely agree with you that trauma definitely is one of the leading factors of why people use, and that was the case for my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Something really traumatic had happened to her.
She was 9 years old, and she was sexually abused. So let's be clear.
Something like that. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. She was sexually abused, and the only way she could cope with it was turning to the community that was welcoming to her, and you know, she kind of ran with it from there. My mom, she always felt like an outsider growing up, even when she was in close proximity to family.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, by the time I was 2 years old, I was in full custody of my grandmother, because my mom just couldn't settle down, you know. Mom's never been one of those people that, you know, she can like root herself in one place, like she always has to be on the go. And she gave a little bit of that to me too, about the same way, except in the nature where I have some responsibilities now that I have to take care of that keeps me grounded. But my mom never could find that for herself. And I remember the first time I was ever introduced to the homeless community. I was younger than five, and I remember looking at them and just seeing myself in their faces, you know, like it could be any one of us, you know. And I remember at a young age, I looked at them and I just remember being like, why isn't there any help? You know, even then there wasn't enough help. You know, I see a lot of people hurting, and, you know, them using substances is honestly the only thing that makes them feel like themselves. And it also kind of takes them away from the pain they've been inflicted with. You know, even just for a moment, you know, like, yeah, the high is like a 5-minute high, but that was who knows how long for them in their mental stability. And also, I guess, first time I ever personally became homeless, I was, I guess I was on the borderline of being, I mean, I was a child, homeless with my mother, but I mean, by myself, I was about 15 going on 16. And what happened? So I was dealing with a lot of shit at home. I remember becoming truant, and that kind of escalated things in my family life. And then I came out as being queer, and then that also did its job. I had a lot of family turn their backs against me, you know. I come from a very Catholic...
conservative background.
Mexican, yeah. They're, they're very conservative, yes. So, you know, the thought of somebody in their family being gay, or what they like to call it, they called me a joto.
A hobo?
Joto.
I mean, I thought you said hobo. Wait, well, that, wait a minute.
Joto is Spanish for gay.
Oh, okay, okay.
Or more discriminative.
Oh, more very, it's like an insult, it sounds like. Okay, okay.
It definitely
okay.
uses a slur.
Okay.
And I definitely did not feel welcome there. I was also combating being abused by my stepfather. So,
oh, sorry.
You know, it's time to get the hell out of here. And I continued to go to school homeless until I got my GED. And then after that, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go and have a f***ing free-for-all and do what I want to do. And I started using myself, the substances I used to like to do. Well, at first it started out with prescription drugs. I had been in an accident when I was younger, and so I got addicted to that. And then when I was on the street, I started doing a little bit of everything. You know, there wasn't anything I wasn't doing except for heroin. Not saying anything to people that do that. I had a little bit of a limit for myself. I also am like kind of terrified of needles. Thanks, Mom. She's terrified of needles too.
So you, what you said to me is very moving and powerful. And I, when you were saying it, I was feeling it, but also my mind is like, of course, because the situation is so new, what the elderly woman expressing it. So I can truly connect and understand what you mean. It's very, very difficult out here, and and generational trauma is very real too.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, and it's, and you're explaining it to me very well, because I understand that broken glass cuts, and unfortunately, it affects us all. You know, as a child, you ingest and you want the best for your mom. If you see that she's not okay, then you're going to resonate. It's going to resonate. And I wanted to know, it's like, what was your guiding force? Again, you said you was a street sheep, but is there anything that you hear that you would like to influence or kind of encourage some people that are going through maybe similar situations? Would you?
I guess the only thing I have to say is, you know, like, don't be afraid to use your voice, because I was afraid to use it for so long, you know, until I came to the coalition.
Why were you afraid?
I was afraid to use my voice before because I was, it was like in fear of like retaliation or someone being like, shut up, bitch. Like, you don't know what the f*** you're talking about. Like, people that just didn't have any personal experience to being homeless and, you know, just see homelessness as like this demon in the night, and it's really not. You know,
it's so multi-layered, and that's one of the things that I so advocate even among our in our community. I tell people that maybe experience a different brand of homelessness or being unhoused or displaced, that, you know, we don't corner the market on who should get help or not. We have to understand there's so much that's going on. You know, and one of the things, one of the communities that I've been trying to work with is like getting to the sex workers, and there's so much shame and so much branding against that from it. But the second,
this country was made on sex workers.
Thank you. And it's the oldest and it's been the oldest profession. You could look at the Bible and you could see it's the oldest profession in the world. But yeah, it's like our puritanical and our judgmental way of doing it.
There's always a want for it. There's always a need for it. And it's going to last me on this earth, you know? It's going to continue for another thousands of years.
Yes. Long before.
Whenever this thing ends, you know what I mean? Like, sex work has always been a thing.
Yeah.
And I've never, you know, when I was younger, I couldn't understand why my mom did it until I had to basically sit in her shoes and be like, oh, this is why. You know, it's, again, another form of supplemental income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also, to some degree, it does dignify a person, you know, because they're, you know, they call the hours, they call the shots. Mm-hmm. This is like a self-made hustle, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
exactly. Absolutely. And my mom, you know, she definitely liked having the freedom of, you know, choosing what she wanted to do with her body. And, you know, I find that very liberating, you know, especially for just women in general. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of the times throughout history, we've been told, like, shut up, fuck off, like, you're a whore, fuck you, you piece of shit. Like, all these different things. And it's like, why, though? Like, why?
Dehumanize you by using your own sexuality or your choices and your who you are. That I see it consistently. Unfortunately, we live in a misogynistic world and a very masculine, dominant world. And the first thing we hear is that she wants to
misogynistic.
Yeah, definitely so.
Views. A lot of the times men don't want, and I don't want to genderize this, but I'm just saying, a lot of the times when people are very conservative about sex work, it's just because they don't understand what it takes to, like, you know, it's not for the meek of heart.
Somebody has to be
a strong person, a strong individual, to even put themselves out like that. You know what I mean?
And confident.
My mom has always been a strong person.
And not only that, resourceful, because, like, there's been a lot of women that have been using it to feed their families, which we've showed in other places things like that, or taking and only for someone to try to minimize or reduce them and their whole accent without understanding. That's one of the things.
Sure, we were clothed, always made sure we had food, you know. Sometimes people would come and go, but she'd always make them leave. You know, she wouldn't just let them stay. I mean, you know, she did her thing that she had to do for us. Unfortunately, I don't have the best relationship right now with my mom. It's a little strained. And that's because over the last 5, even 6 years, I've had to grow to a certain point where I feel like I've had to leave her. You know, I'm at this point in my life where our ideals and our ideology of each other just does not meet with one another. But I don't love her any less because of what she does. I just always constantly worry about her. You know, even when I was homeless and my mom was homeless and I didn't see her, like, I always looked up at the stars and
hope she was safe and home. Yeah, I understand. And, like, you know, families are complex and complicated. And, like, this situation here is, like, our society has got to be much more kinder and much more understanding. And one of the things that I really thank you for sharing this, and I hope, like, people that are listening to this meet in the light of understanding and also offers a word of kindness and encouragement to one another in order for us to get through this.
Definitely. I guess to kind of follow back, because I remember one of the things you asked to another interviewee was, you were, like, asking, like, what you would do differently or, like, how you would implement things better. You know, and I think it's just it's one of those things where we kind of have to get over the elephant in the room and we kind of have to just chip away.
Thank you.
And, you know, have, like, the broader understanding that this person that's doing this, like, it didn't just happen overnight.
Right.
You know, eventually they were led to this path because, you know, a lot of people, they think that people don't have choices. You know, people do have choices, but I will say that what choice do you have if you grew up in poverty? There's not many choices. Like, I grew up in poverty, and a lot of the times I had to basically create options for myself because they don't exist, and they don't exist for other people.
And
so one of the things I would like to do, and if the city officials ever listen to this podcast, I hope they do, you know, I want them to understand that, like, you know, stop pushing away people's like pain and stop kind of like dismissing it all in one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are what we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am, my identity is not my homelessness, but my homelessness is an experience. And I take that with me every day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I might have been housed now the last 2 years. I was homeless for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I was introduced to homelessness. And it never sat right with me, you know? Like, how are we one of the richest cities in the world,
mm-hmm.
and there's so much poverty?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Thank you very much, Ms. Rokill, for your time. This is Theo Henderson from Weedian House, and I thank you all for listening. Let us hope to, again, if we meet in the light of understanding and kindness.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.